Hi, and welcome to another episode of Django Chat. I'm Carlton Gibson. I'm here as ever with Will Vincent.
Hi, Carlton.
And today we're... Hello, Will. And today we're joined by Jessica Deaton. Hello, Jessica.
Hi.
Hi. Jessica's a, massively involved in the Django world. She's been involved with Django Girls, Django Con US, and she's on the DSF board. So we're going to talk to her about all kind of things. So, Jessica, how about we kick off? Can you tell us a bit about yourself and how you got involved in Django and that kind of thing?
Sure. So right now I am a software developer. I live in Wilmington, North Carolina. I started my development career not as a typical computer science major, but I was actually a film major and got started kind of doing hardware support on the side just for fun. And then I was working at an elementary school. They asked me to be their webmaster. I had no idea how to do anything regarding web development. So I taught myself some basic HTML, CSS, a little bit of JavaScript, and discovered I liked that a lot more than I liked doing hardware support. So I started looking for introductory software development jobs and junior software developer jobs. And the University of Texas offers a six-month paid program where they teach you how to code. So I went through their boot camp, and that's where I learned Django.
Right. They use Django a lot at UT, do they?
They do, and in kind of in interesting ways. They actually have a mainframe backend and wrote their own broker exchange to kind of convert all of these strings into stuff that could be used on the web, and they build Django applications on top of that. So pretty
That is cool.
Different than most Django developers, I'd say.
Do they still have that program? Because I know a lot of people have come out of that, but I thought they maybe canceled that program or weren't doing it anymore.
They do still have that program. It used to be centrally funded and run by the university, but now it's basically separate departments have their own version of it that they do. So they're kind of bringing in people, putting them through the same boot camp, but focusing on what their department really needs and trying to teach people more department specific stuff. But it's still Python, Django, and mostly mainframe backend.
So they're like embedding the troops.
Yeah.
The reporters with the troops.
Right.
Yeah. So, well, in some ways, 6 months seems like a luxurious amount of time. That's great. I mean, you know, I say 3 months is sort of the standard. 6 months is, if I had 6 months to just focus on anything, that'd be great.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting experience. And I had not really heard a lot about software boot camps before joining that program. It was really just a fluke. And I was almost like, is this too good to be true? And I kind of, forgive me, but I posted on Reddit and was like, what is this program? Is this some kind of trick? And actually, a few people that had gone through it replied to me and they were like, no, this is a really great program. We've learned a lot. The community's great. So ended up being life-changing for me.
Right. And you went from beginner there, like basically, I mean, you knew a bit of HTML, you said, but and CSS and stuff, but like beginner Python programmer to...
Yeah, absolutely.
Fully competent. And so did you go from there to another role or?
So after the 6 months, you are placed in a department. You interview with a few departments, but you ultimately kind of get placed somewhere. And then, so you start as kind of a junior software developer, and then you just move your way up the ranks based on what you contribute to the department and how quickly you learn. And so I spent 4 years at the international office at UT and worked my way up to senior developer over that time.
Yeah, right. Okay. So it's like any other commercial role at that point.
Yeah.
Super. I have one question. You said mainframe. How are they using authentication there? Are they using remote user authentication backend?
They are. Sorry to jump in. I believe that they are, because I was going to say after my talk, Carlton, where we first met, a bunch of UT Austin people asked me specifically about remote user and sort of explained the system. And I was like, yeah, that's way beyond what I know.
We did an episode. Well, it's all right. We did an episode on authentication backends, and Will's like, well, what's this remote user one? And I'm like, well, if you've got an enterprise environment with some other author, and of course, like some mainframe is the perfect example of that. You've got your user accounts in the mainframe, but then you want to authenticate to your Django application, remote user.
Yep, that's exactly authentication right.
Backend. Super.
Sorry, so that's one example.
Massively geeking out of that.
So you're there 4 years, and then what happened?
So at that point, some other people who had gone through the program at UT and had been at UT for several years moved out to the East Coast to work for a startup that works in fintech. And after a few of the people that I knew and loved from UT went out there and convinced me to come too, I decided to try out the private sector. So I moved everything out to Wilmington, North Carolina, where I had never been, and started working in fintech, which I knew nothing about. And we operate on a Salesforce platform. So I also had to switch from Python to Apex, which is like a Java Lite. And we weren't using Angular. We weren't using Django. We were using Angular. So I had to basically learn an entirely new stack, all new web framework, all new backend language. It was interesting. It's very different, very stressful, but I'm glad that I took a chance on learning it.
But you're building Angular apps on top of a REST API kind of thing there.
It's interesting. So the Salesforce that we're using is more antiquated than Salesforce provides presently. So it's more of a still, we're building Angular inside of Visual Force pages and components. So it's interesting. I haven't done a whole lot on the front end in over a year. I've primarily just been doing back-end integration API work for them. So the Angular stuff is new. We also do Knockout and Angular JS, and it's we are in the process of rebuilding, and I'm not sure how much I should say.
But all shops are in that process. All shops. We're always rebuilding, and that's the fun of JavaScript, right?
Yeah.
Okay, super. But you moved from working on Django full time, but you haven't left the Django world, right? So you're very much involved in Django Girls, for instance.
Yeah. So I did. I did two or three workshops for Django Girls in Austin. One or two of them just as a coach and one of them as an organizer. And that's kind of what got me involved with Sarah Gore and Rebecca Kinshi, who were already organizing for DjangoCon US and had worked with Lacey when she was at UT. And so they kind of invited me to participate in DjangoCon US. So I started organizing for DjangoCon US back in 2016.
Okay, and you're still there?
2017 was my first year. And I just started out on the program team, didn't know what I was doing. I thankfully had Kenneth Love and Tim Allen to kind of guide me in the right direction. Of course, Jeff Triplett and Lacey Henschel are both amazing mentors. So they kind of just threw me in and let me go. I really enjoyed the program team. I did that again in 2018. And then in 2019, they've convinced me to chair the conference. So now I'm responsible for the whole thing.
Right. Okay. So the buck really comes home now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, Jeff and Lacey have been amazing, and they've still been there to mentor me and help me out a lot. And Sarah Gore is my co-chair, and she is phenomenal. So it's a good team. It's a good team. It's exciting, but I'm just so nervous.
Yeah, right. Okay, you'll do fine. You'll do fine. Can you tell me about this thing called DEFNA? Because, you know, you hear about DjangoCon, you know about Django, you know about the Django Software Foundation, but then there's this thing called DEFNA. Can you explain what that is? Because you see it around.
So to my understanding, DEFNA was formed as a nonprofit derivative of the Django Software Foundation, primarily to run DjangoCon.
So it stands for Django Events of North America or something similar.
Yeah, Django Events Foundation of North America.
Right, okay.
Jeff is the president. We have several organizers that are actually on the board for DEFNA. I think all of the board members for DEFNA actually organize. So.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and I kind of kicked myself for not running to be on the board for DEFNA. So I made up for that by running for the board for the Django Software Foundation.
Yeah, I was about to say, have you not got already enough to do?
I have plenty. My plate is very, very full these days.
Tell us about your role on the board, the Django Software Foundation board.
That's been an interesting ride. I started off... I wanted to run for the board because I was really interested in trying to produce more mentorship opportunities and try to better engage with the members. I feel like when I was voted as a member, I didn't really know what that meant. It was kind of like, this is a great honor for me, but now what do I do with this? Is there something I should be doing with this title? Is there something I should be doing as part of the community now that I've been recognized? My name is on a Django project page, so should I be doing something? And there was not really an answer for that. It was kind of just like, no, congratulations. And I was happy about that, but I also felt like, me personally, I wanted to do more, but I had no idea what to do. So I had several conversations with people in the Django community, and you know, some of those were about Django Core, and I was kind of, I don't know, what's the word I want to use here? It was interesting for me to learn that DjangoCon US is such a diverse set of attendees and speakers, and that we really strive for diversity and inclusion in that arena, but that the core members of Django who were contributing code were very much just men, and mostly white men, or maybe all yeah. white men at the time that I had this conversation. And that was something that I felt was very conflicting with how I felt personally about the Django community. And it was something that I wanted to change. So I had a really good conversation with Sasha and with Andrew Godwin and Jeff Triplett at DjangoCon US in Spokane. And then I kind of just saw, that's when I got added as a member, was after that conversation. So then I felt particularly compelled to figure out what I could do. Yeah, I saw that we started an email thread to dissolve Core, and that was really exciting to me. And I just thought I wanted to be a bigger part of that and figure out better ways that I could help bring the rest of Django up to speed with where DjangoCon US was.
Yeah, that's all super.
So,
because I think there's a lot of people who are members of the DSF or members of the Django community who are in exactly that same position where, you know, we all want to make the community better and we want to make the contributor base more diverse, but how do we do that? Actionable steps for individual members who knows? That's difficult.
Yeah. And it's a very hard problem to solve. And I definitely have not solved it and haven't done a whole lot to change it, unfortunately. I kind of, once I joined the DSF, there was a need for a treasurer as Rebecca Conley was stepping down. And I was kind of de facto put into that position just because I was a US resident. So I tried my hand at treasurer for a few months, but between that and the conference and my job, it was just, I didn't have any experience as a treasurer really. And I just felt like I was maybe doing more of a disservice than a service. So I stepped back from that role. And now I'm kind of watching with great interest the project that Jacob has suggested, where he's now interviewing for people to help him build this application to help us induct members to the DSF. I'm really, really excited for that. I think it's a great idea. I really want to see how that goes. And I hope that we can do more projects like that in the future. I think that's going to be amazing for this community. So,
yeah.
And he got
more mentoring.
Oh, sorry, Carl.
No, go on, Will.
I think he, well, so that came up, Frank Wiles mentioned it right before it happened. And I think there were over 1,000 people who applied for it, which, I mean, you know, I'd like to be mentored by Jacob, you know, but that's amazing. And that's great that so many people were aware of it and saw the opportunity for what it is. And I think, you know, figuring out the funding too, because I think it's a lot of people who would like to mentor. I think Jacob's volunteering to do it and the person is being paid or something like that. But yeah, but it's a great step that I think there's a lot of those things where more formalized mentorship, I think, on core Django things.
Yeah.
Go on, Jessica.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, we were all floored by the number of applications, which, I mean, I don't know why we were so shocked. It's an amazing opportunity. But yeah, we were very happy and astounded. And it was very generous of Jacob to offer all of the money the DSF was going to provide to whoever built that application to just go to his mentee. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I know there was an announcement on the Django community site, but I mean, at least personally, I feel like I don't always know where to turn for Django news. And that's partly why we do this podcast, to try to be one, a curated source. But I feel like there's, sometimes things get lost in the noise, or there'll be things. I mean, the Django site itself is so deep that I miss plenty of stuff. So I'm glad that didn't happen, and that it filtered up.
Also interesting that you think, there's just the blog post, there's just the Twitter feed, there's just a few people in the community, and maybe it doesn't get much response. And you think, the community's quite small. But then when something comes up like this comes up and you get 1,000 applicants, you're like, no, it's actually much bigger and much more active than you think. It's just a lot of people aren't vocal for reason X or Y or Z.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think that's something else that that I hope that I can figure out a better way to address. But it kind of back to being inducted as a member to the DSF and not really knowing what to do with that, and not really knowing when I should or should not say something. So if an email comes through and someone's proposing something like Jacob proposes, does my opinion of that matter? Do I say yes or no to that? Like, who wants to hear what I have to say, and what's the best way for me to say that? And I think that we can do a better job of helping people in the community, whether or not they're a DSF member or just somebody that attends our conference once a year, or just somebody who quietly, privately uses Django in their own shop and maybe checks out our Twitter feed from time to time, know how they can participate and know that we do care about what they have to say, and that they help shape this community. And so I hope we can find some better ways to make people feel like they can vocalize their opinions about what we do in our community and how to make it better and more wide reaching.
Yeah, I sometimes feel that the Google Groups interface is a little linear.
Sometimes.
It's a little off-putting.
I mean, honestly, it was totally shocking to me a year and a half ago when I first saw it. And I was like, wait, Django seems modern, but this is, this is 15 years old. I mean, I'm now more used to it, but it's, lots of things to do.
And I think y'all actually brought up in one of your other podcasts about all the different places you might have to go to get information about Django or to participate in discussions about Django, whether it's the Discord or the Google group or. I think, William, you said about how nice it would be to have one centralized place for that to happen. And I agree. Yeah. Maybe that's something we can work towards. But people have to propose those ideas, and people have to be able to say, here's a good solution that we can try to implement. And right now, I think it's hard to figure out how to deliver those ideas.
I'd be interested to see what happens with the Mozilla conversation, because they're having this exact discussion right now there, where they're going to drop IRC for whatever reason, because it's not that particularly friendly, and they're looking for something else, and it has to be hosted. It's not something they want to build themselves, and it has to be open to new members. And, it'd be interesting to see what they conclude. And maybe we can jump on the back of that or something like that.
That's a good idea. I mean, the problem I find with is often discoverability, which, I mean, Stack Overflow does pretty well. With discourse, for example, it's hard to find stuff. I mean, Stack Overflow is really good. I think you type in a question and looking for something, saying, oh, there's already existing answers to it, so there's no duplication. But, I think that and the curation, because I've certainly thought a lot about it. I get asked to do it a lot, and it would be a nice thing to do. I mean, certainly because there's plenty of people with knowledge out there who want to share it and don't want to repeat themselves, what the platform is, and then making it discoverable. And then also, there's a lot of disagreements. There's a certain level, it's just very subjective Django stuff. Which is interesting. I mean, I think we're showing that on the podcast, but I would say there's sort of like the first half you can broadly agree, and then it becomes pretty subjective and interesting if you know what you're talking about, but maybe less directly beneficial of like, how do I solve this problem right now? Which is generally what the kind of questions I get, at least from people, which I get. They're like, this is broken. I mean, just like today, I have a post on search. I wrote a recent post on search, and someone in the comments was asking me a question about like, oh, my login's not working. I was like, well, the tutorial's not on login, but I get it. There's a lot of people with questions out there, and a lot of people with answers. So to the extent it can be easy for those people to interact, that'd be nice. And I guess to go on that thread, ditto with mentorship. I mean, I've been asked, I think probably a number of people who teach for a living, to be someone's mentor, and it's kind of a big ask, and it usually needs to be a two-way street, but something that's formalized and public, the way Jacob's thing is, I mean, that's such a great way to tap into the desire of people, who know Django, who want to help, but not be overwhelmed. And that's really, inspiring thing to see that as maybe the first of many around these Django things that need to be done.
Yeah, definitely.
One difficulty there is the time commitment for mentoring, right? It's
yeah,
like
it's not small.
About, you know, being on the DSF board, being the treasurer, organizing DjangoCon, you've got a job, and then what? You've got to find time for mentoring as well. Well, how much time is that? And the same with contributing to, you know, if you're going to solve tickets on Django, well, how much time are you going to give to that on top of all the other commitments you've got? I don't know.
Yeah.
We see people getting burnt out quite regularly because they're not able to say where that limit is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it was an easy problem to solve, then it would be solved.
I guess so. One thing I wanted to ask you about was mentoring at the sprints, because at PyCon, PyCon just now, they had mentored sprints for introducing new contributors to the Python projects, and they had mentors arranged and they had groups and you could get involved. And I saw that when coming back from DjangoCon Europe, where we had sprints, and I spent the entire 2 days running around and helping people with tickets. But I was spreading myself really thin because it just wasn't, we hadn't organized it properly. And one thing I'd really like to, I think it's a good opportunity, something we can do, and I don't know if you've got thoughts on, Jessica, is can we do mentoring at the sprints at DjangoCon events?
Yeah, and I think actually last year we kind of took a step in that direction. Nick James, who was one of the chairs last year, brought in somebody to do like an introduction to Git and how to make your first pull request. And I think that went over really well. And I think it's a good idea. I think we've had ideas for sprints too about maybe bringing in people to help you workshop your resume or to help you practice for tech interviews. And helping people, I mean, Nick actually was the person who helped me make my first PR to sprint. So it definitely goes a long way for taking intimidation out of it. I was very intimidated attending sprints for the first time and thinking, well, I mean, the development that I've done has been so particular to the University of Texas, and now these are big, major projects. Like now, I'm trying to sprint on PyBe, and like I barely even use Python in my job now. I don't use it at all now, but it's very intimidating. And we were a subversion shop, so I'd never used Git. And that was just such assumed knowledge at the sprint. Everybody knew Git. Everybody had done pull requests. So it was very intimidating. And I think maybe setting up sprints in a way that's more targeted to for new people and then more targeted at more experienced people would be a better way to include people. It's just difficult when you're not really sure what the projects are going to be, who's going to be presenting something to sprint on, and how much time they've taken before coming to the conference to kind of sort out the different things they want people to work on into low-hanging fruit or beginner-friendly versus things that are a little more intermediate or require some real expertise.
So perhaps as well, there's room for thinking about the run-up to the conference, to the sprint, saying, have you got a potential project? Are you running a project? What tickets can you group together to get beginners involved in that kind of thing? Because again, there were people at DjangoCon Europe who were, I'm going to work on this, I'm going to work on that, but I don't know how organized they were in terms of bringing people on. They were, you know, very willing to, but there's a difference between willingness and making it happen.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think, you know, we do at DjangoCon US, we usually do have someone in charge of sprints. That's been Kojo for as many years as I've been involved. And Nick has been helping him with sprints. But I think that having people that can be very dedicated to that process and maybe start it off a little earlier than just calling for what people want to sprint on at the very last day of the conference or over lunch would be helpful to make it more inclusive for people that are beginners.
And it follows all the way through to the repo, because as you said, we've got a lot of male contributors, a lot of white contributors, but we're really struggling to bring people on board from the wider community. And it's not meant to be intimidating. There are lots of quite easy tickets. You know, they still need time and love and energy, but they're not rocket science. They just need someone to work on them. And I think there's a real opportunity for people from the community to get involved, but it's not happening.
I mean, I think that initial setup, though, Carlton, is part of the problem, which I hope to do before Django kind of video on. Just installing Django locally is, I mean, I was sitting at PyCon, I was sharing a room with Michael Herman, who's very experienced. And it, you know, it took him a couple hours to work out the bugs. So I think, I hope to contribute and do that. But I think just that first step, just configuring it.
Yeah, getting this test suite to run without a failure.
Yeah, just getting to that. And actually, he submitted a pull request just for the Django Docs site, making it Dockerized, which I need to review. That's a great contribution to the point of, you know, people can know what they're going to work on. And they come in ready to work as opposed to kind of what you're doing, running around fixing bugs or like talks isn't working. That would feel less helpful than, yeah, working on actual stuff.
Yeah, I think there's also, and I think you've spoken to this in some of your previous podcasts as well, is the notion of a beginner has very different meanings to different people. beginner could mean that, you know, this is my first conference. I'm just starting out and I'm trying to teach myself and I've wandered into sprints and there's some assumed knowledge that I should have even as a beginner that I may not have. And then I turn around and walk back out because it's just too much. Or I'm a beginner who's been developing with Django for maybe a year and I'm fairly inexperienced and rely heavily on senior developers to kind of steer my code in the right direction. Or I have somebody that facilitates deployments for me, so it's not something I need to worry about. Or we have a security team that does authentication for us, so I'm really just building out the web pieces and I don't worry about the rest of the stack. So it's beginner is an interesting term in code development, and that's something that also adds another layer of difficulty when you're trying to cater to the wider community.
That's a word like simple and easy. I try really hard not to use or write, and I suggest others never use them either because it's completely subjective and sort of
saying, oh, just do this, clone the repo.
Well, just yesterday I saw someone was doing, he's like, oh, you know, it's simple. And I was like, well, that's not simple at all. Like, it's, you know, same thing with beginner. Everyone's a beginner at something.
Yeah, I had one idea, one thought last year that maybe we could somehow leverage the work that the Django Girls community were doing to say, well, look, you know, there's a further step you can take to contributing to Django. But I think there's just too big a gap between the target audience for Django Girls, which perhaps people have never, never looked at a website before at all, to building one, I mean, to then contributing to Django. It's just too big a gap. Something in between we need to get people there.
Yeah. Well, actually, on this topic of education, I'm wondering, Jessica, do you remember when you were learning Django, because that was your first web development, what were like the hard parts for you? Because I think a lot about this teaching and I have some thoughts, but I'm curious for you if you recall kind of the places where it was kind of sticky or took a while for it to sort of sink in, how web development and specifically Django fits together.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's been 7 years now. Let me. I think one of the harder parts, actually, interestingly, the Django itself was not necessarily the hardest part for me when learning. It did take me a little bit to kind of understand how all of the different pieces work together and how the settings file and then the URLs and your templates and your views and on how all of those pieces kind of fit together and worked in Orchestra. But I think the harder part for me was really just the difference between my local development and then actually deploying and then getting stuff out into production on the web. And like that whole process was very obfuscated to me. And I was just kind of like, that's very magical. And I don't really understand how it works. So when I get weird errors when I'm trying to push my code or when I'm trying to migrate things or... yeah, all of that was really black boxy. And then right at the end of my time at the University of Texas was when migrations was introduced. We were a little bit behind in Django. And so trying to work with the migrations files and that was, that was so frustrating. It was just like, okay, well, I'll just delete all the migrations files and try again.
that's actually advanced techniques, tips and tricks.
Oh, yeah, I was doing that yesterday.
Clear the table out.
I do that all the time.
And it feels wrong. It's like, oh, I must be doing this wrong and I must have no idea what I'm doing. Someone else could totally fix this. But for now, I'm just going to blow everything away and start over. And that feels like such a... like an immature developer who isn't going to take the time to really figure out what's breaking and
no,
and
that's
fix
pro
it.
Techniques. It's pro techniques. Yeah. Well, I think what you said, I find that, yeah, how the pieces fit together. That's a huge one for people because it is largely the four different things, the models, the views, the URLs, and the templates. And I always think, you know, maybe there's a graphical way to show that, or I think partly it's just repetition. But that's a big one. Deployment. Yeah. Deployment. Yeah. I migrated locally. Why isn't it working? Why isn't it migrating production? Like that's another. And then deployment is so varied in Django because it's there isn't like a default deployment pattern, I would say, the way there are in some other frameworks. And then I think with Django and most web frameworks, the logic piece, I think when you hit intermediate level, that's kind of where it's confusing. Because like for Django, like where do you put the logic? Well, you can put it in the views, but then you'll hear people say, well, really, you should put it in the models. And that means you need to understand what a manager is. Like, oh, geez. And then you can do it, you know, generic class-based, you can do it class-based, you can do it function-based. And some level, I feel like the heart of intermediate advanced Django, for me at least, is around that logic. And how you do it is widely, there's no clear patterns. I mean, people will still argue for, you know, function, class-based, and then, you know, get it working versus optimism, kind of the next step. But at least for me, like, I mean, that's still what I sort of, the parts of Django that I think about a lot and struggle with are that logic piece, less so the maybe the structural stuff that you mentioned, you know, when you're first learning out settings, files, and yeah, just how it all fits together on the board.
Yeah, I think also just, I mean, and this continues to be a struggle for me even after 7 years of development is like just getting your environment ready and starting. Is
Docker.
Annoying.
Yeah, no, you know, virtual environments. Well, what I have to do too with, you know, different versions of, if I ever don't use Docker now, like if I'm, you know, Python 3.7 versus 3.6, yesterday I did this twice. I was nuking something. It is a crazy thing about Python. I mean, if you use JavaScript, it's like, oh, it just works. Like, no big deal.
You try having multiple versions of Node installed on your path and see what happens there as well. Like, It's not that JavaScript is all simple. It's that you haven't got this crusty computer where you've been building the JavaScript applications for the last 5 years, and all of a sudden you've got all these different versions installed in these different places, and Project X only works with version 6, and this one works with version 10. And why did we go from 6 to 10 so quickly? What happened there? Like,
yeah, you know. Well, path variables. If I could change something about modern computing, I would just blow that up. I understand why it exists, but seriously. The first time you come across path variables, still to this day, I just hold my breath and go, oh, damn, whenever I have to deal with path variables.
Don't you just prepend something new to the
Yeah, just it's just like you're 40, you know, exports long. It's just like, oh, just hold my breath and it works. Yeah, playing with dot files. Oh, my God. Yeah. Anyways, you know, I still feel that way, right? I mean, some people enjoy fiddling with that stuff. But anyways, this was a topic at PyCon about, you know, how do we make Python accessible and what are the challenges? And one of them is it's hard to package Python programs, but also just installing it is a real pain. And a lot of the educators were speaking about different approaches they take because there are some web-based versions that students can use. But yeah, it's a potential killer problem for Python.
Yeah.
I guess, sorry, Jessica, go on.
No, I was just agreeing.
Can I cut back to what Will said about where you put the logic? Because like I've worked in multiple languages over the years and multiple environments on multiple platforms. And I don't think it's just Django. I think it's every platform that you struggle to know where to put the business logic such that it's as clear as can be and as maintainable as can be. And, you know, how I'm sure that happens in Salesforce as well, right? You're using this language and you might want to put it in place A or place B. I don't know. What do you think there?
That's definitely true. And everybody has an opinion about it. And it doesn't make it any easier that depending on what team you might be working on or if you change jobs, you are likely going to go into a shop that's doing it differently and will either defend what they're doing to the death or not have the time to refactor it. So you're constantly having to learn to deal with whatever decision this shop or this team made, you know, maybe years ago. So it's like you can never really learn the right way. You always just have to learn whatever way you're being paid to do it.
Well, and there isn't really a right way is the, you know, the thing I realize, which is a little bit frustrating. I mean, it'd be nice if, you know, I've had this idea and I should do something about it of, you know, pick five people who know their way around Django and build a simple CRUD app with auth. And just build it and then defend the approach that they took because they would all do it differently. I could probably guess the areas they would do it differently, but there isn't. Yeah, it's less right and more like, oh, I trust what they did and I see why they chose what they chose. And then I agree with it or I don't. But yeah, I think all of us, I would rather just not have to make those decisions, but those are decisions that have to be made. Yeah.
The amount of time that I've spent in a room with several other developers trying to argue the merits of putting stuff one place or coding it this way or setting it up this way. I mean, for all of the time spent in those meetings, you know, litigating our decisions or our opinions, we probably could have built 4 or 5 more products and all been fabulously wealthy by now. But
right. But yeah, I think it does start. It's, I mean, at least, and again, when I'm trying to explain Django to people, I sort of start with, it all starts with the models and you sort out, and you can draw that on a whiteboard. But then it's, yeah, then it's the logic. Then it's really just the business logic and everything else just sort of flows down the URLs and templates and stuff kind of flows from there. But the business logic.
Yeah, interestingly, at the University of Texas, when we were using the mainframe backend, we weren't using models at all. So the first 2 or 3 years that I was developing at UT, I had never made a model whatsoever. We just wrote our own in-house broker that would take the data coming from the mainframe and make it one gigantic string. And then we would parse the string on the front end in Django. And then use that to build out our site.
That sounds amazing.
how would you parse it on the front end with Django? Can you explain that a little more?
Well, I'm in Python. We would just take the string and then we would kind of, it was almost like we would pass in kind of pointers. It almost was like a dictionary, but a stringified dictionary. So you could kind of say like, this is the variable and this is the value for that variable. And then you would just parse that out and pass it to your template with the Django templating language. That was it.
Wow, interesting.
Very interesting way of handling data. So the first time we were using models, I was like, oh, wow, this is very different than basically doing everything with strings.
Okay, but like, you know, it's kind of what we do with a, you know, if you call to a REST API now, you call the GitHub API, you get JSON back, you turn it into a native data structure, you pull out the bits you need. But it's kind of cool having to write that kind of serialization layer.
Yep.
You think it's cool. Yeah.
No, I do. Like, you know, I'm geeking out again.
Serializations, that's the, you know, that's the sort of leap when you, for APIs from Django, that's what people go like, wait, what's the challenge here? It's like, oh, what's a serializer? What's a deserializer? I would say that's the leap with APIs from Django itself.
Okay, cool. Jessica, I wanted to cut back if I could, because you've gone all the way from coaching, you using Django to coaching Django girls all the way to being on the DSF board via contributing to DjangoCon and all the rest of it. And so I guess you're as good a person as anybody to say whether people can get involved. And I guess the answer is, of course they can. But how to get involved and, you know, to point out that is actually accessible.
Yeah. When I first started out with trying to be a part of the broader Django community as far as Django girls, I was kind of just right place, right time, had some friends that were already doing it. But it's actually very easy to get involved if you are listening, right? So we, as part of DjangoCon US, we put out Facebook posts, we put out Twitter or tweets all the time, inviting people to organize. Like, hey, do you want to organize DjangoCon? Shoot us an email. And that's really all there is to it. I think people feel like you kind of have to know somebody or be invited to participate. And that is unfortunately my story, which doesn't sound as accessible as I want to make it out to sound. But we have basically a brand new organizing team this year. We had, I think, 10 or 15 brand new people to organizing, had not organized a conference before or had not been involved with DjangoCon at all. And all they did was send us an email or reply to a tweet just saying they were interested. And then we onboarded them. We got them in as quick as we could and tried to help them figure out what they could work on and what their interests were and how much time they wanted to dedicate. And that was really all. So there's not some big formal process and no one has to vouch for you and no one has to sign a blood oath or a contract. You can really just email us and we're happy to have the help. The more help, the better. And it was kind of the same with the DSF. I had several people say, hey, you have some ideas. You should apply to be on the board. And I just filled out a Google form and that was it.
So, and there you are. Next thing you're in. And yeah. the key point you said there was about the time that people have. So it's not like they have to commit 20 hours a week, or they can, you know, they can, if they've only got a small amount of time, that's still helpful and they can still contribute and still be part of the team.
Yeah, absolutely. We have people that join the organizing team and don't actually do anything until we get on site for the conference. We put out a call for volunteers to help us out on site right before the conference. We have the program team who are heavily involved from the time we get up and running, usually like around February or March, all the way through the conference. They're working their tails off the whole time. But then we have people that are on some of our other teams, like visas, where you just kind of reply to emails here and there. We have, you know, Kojo is our orientation person, and a lot of his work comes right close to the conference. We have people that do swag. So basically, if you have a design that you want to do, if not, we have a design team that will build a design out for you, and you just have to order t-shirts for us. So we really have something for everyone if you're interested and want to get involved, and however much time you have, we can point you in the right direction.
So someone who's listening who wants to get involved, what would you say, what would be the one place or the one thing they should sign up for? What would be that first step? Because we've listed all sorts of ways you can get involved, but what would be the first place, you know, to sign, newsletter, RSS feed? What would you say to that, Jessica?
Oh my gosh. That is such a great question.
Or you can say a couple, but what's the you know, there always should be like an action, right? It's like, okay, we've hyped this up, and it's like, okay, if I'm listening, now what?
Yeah, I feel like it really, I think it depends on how you want to get involved. If you want to get involved by participating in DjangoCon US and helping us, you know, pick a program that will encourage a wider group of people to attend Django, then just send the organizers an email saying you want to get involved and let us help mentor you through that process and get you where you feel like you can provide the most and feel the most supported. That is our goal. If you have bigger, broader ideas for the Django community at large, email the DSF board. I mean, we get tons of emails, but we're always looking for one to come in that's just like, hey, let's try this great idea.
What's the canonical email address? Is it board@djangoproject.com?
DSF-board@djangoproject.
Right. Okay. DSF.
Okay. We'll link to it in the show notes.
Okay. I think that's right. Now that you've asked me, I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's right. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, the way that I kind of got started in the community and the way that I've kind of risen up in the community was really just having conversations with people. DjangoCon has really been a life-changing experience for me, and not just because I got involved as an organizer, but mostly because I was attending the conference and just talking to people that were involved. There were people that were contributing code, people that had been organizing the conference for a long time, people that were just there to give talks. And really just having those conversations with them opened my eyes a lot and allowed me to kind of give my thoughts. I mean, that conversation that I had with Sasha and Andrew and Jeff was really just me saying, wow, I'm kind of shocked that Django Core doesn't reflect what I see at DjangoCon. And that's a little distressing. And I wish that weren't the case. And I think from that conversation, we've seen some active change to try to break up Core and get people, a more diverse set of people involved. And so just having those conversations can be just as powerful as dedicating your time to try to run a conference or be a board member.
Yeah. So just even like if people don't feel that they can contribute to organizing the conference, or they don't have ideas for the DSF, just coming to a DjangoCon or a DjangoCon Europe and experience the community, because frankly, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I don't develop in Django anymore. But I still dedicate all of my free time outside of work to Django just because I love this community and I love what we're trying to do. I think we still have a lot of room for improvement, but the things that I've seen in this community are exceptional compared to what I've seen in other tech communities. And I just want us to continue to grow that. And the way that we do that is by having people feel psychologically safe and empowered to give their opinions and their thoughts, and doing that in person at DjangoCon, or doing that in a tweet on Twitter, or doing that in an email. All of those are fine ways to do it, as long as we're hearing from people.
Super.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. I'm sure it will resonate with a lot of people.
Jessica, thank you for coming on the show. It's been awesome having you.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me. I appreciate that you gave me the platform to talk about some of this stuff. I really enjoy the podcast. I appreciate that you're doing it.